My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
Man, we are at an absolute skeleton crew on the Bear Grease Podcast.
Wow.
You say, some say skeleton, some say the dream team.
That's what I'm saying. There's five of us.
I'm saying dream team.
Dream team.
It's hard to work with a diva.
It really is, yeah.
We just keep churning through people. I don't know.
Was it some of those private conversations?
Maybe.
Coincidence?
Maybe. Man, you wouldn't believe who I invited today. That they wouldn't come.
Who? Wow.
I mean, I could go through names.
Elvis.
No, just Pete person after person after person.
Pete person.
Maybe you should get somebody else to do the inviting.
Give me the list next time. Maybe I can get more people.
Yeah, I missed you, dude.
No, so typically on the Bear Grease Render, we have six people. Today we have five. It really is the dream team.
I can stretch my legs out today at least.
Yeah,
I feel like it's a little bit sketchy to say this is a skeleton crew.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for typically where we have six people, this is a skeleton.
We're missing
Josh and
that
I
person.
Are not wedged into one headset. That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
That mustache tickles my ears.
On the other side of your
head. We've already had an interesting beginning. Dan had to totally fix one of our chairs. He was screwing together a chair. But hey, welcome to the Bear Grease Render.
Good to be
here.
Hey,
this is the Thanksgiving edition of the Bear Grease Render.
Well, happy Thanksgiving.
I'm glad you didn't skip over it and go straight to Christmas. That's the way it's going in my house, and I'm not happy about it.
Really? Hey, man, some of the patrons of our town that we live in, like 10 days before Thanksgiving, they've got Christmas lights up.
Every time a Christmas decoration goes up before Thanksgiving, they throw a pilgrim off the ship. Every time. I hope you're happy, community we live in.
Yes, exactly. Man, every time I drive past it, I lecture my kids on why they need to dial it back a notch.
Yeah.
Just a notch.
We got to instill the right values and claim when people are wrong.
That's right.
Listen, I think that we do need to have a community conversation about holiday decor in general. There's a big push, and I don't know if this is appropriate to talk about on the Bear Grease Podcast, but there's a big push for morbidity when it comes to
Halloween decorations.
It's like they wake up and they see their neighbors. I won't speak of what they put in their yard. It's so gross and gruesome for Halloween. And then the other neighbors seem to think, oh, we should do that too. And there's like a domino effect.
Yeah, I understand.
It's pretty...
There is a strong correlation, and it goes back to ancient human, ancient human social, the way that we interact with each other socially. Okay. You go to any little town in the world, in the United States, and you drive through...
Is it the world or is it the States?
The United States. And if there's one family that does something really well, you'll usually find a cluster of families. And if you have history in that community, you'll be like, hey, they used to be the only one that did that. What we're talking about is Halloween decor, okay? There are people that are real comfortable with like putting like skeletons, burning witches,
headless
people in their front yards
their front
for
yard.
Halloween.
For a month, I have to drive by that just to go get groceries. Like, I can't get milk without seeing something that I would not.
That is supposed to incite in us, like, oh, man, that's where we'll stop when we take our kids to go knock on their door to get candy.
No, thank you. No, thank
you. Maybe it's like that's what they're trying to do is keep people from coming to their house. Maybe they don't even buy candy.
More
These
candy
are
for us.
I think people are so desensitized to it that you just see Halloween decor. And you're like, oh, these people are festive. No, that's like wildly inappropriate.
Yeah, it's something else.
So anyway, our neighbors put up some Christmas lights down here, like way before Thanksgiving. And I appreciate the passion of it.
We need a community conversation about what
all.
Is appropriate.
Is there a group of people that you guys are okay with? That's what I want to know. Just, I feel like the open-mindedness of the Newcomb household is off the charts.
I don't think it's very open right now.
We need to have some more community conversations, which I feel like would be rather one way from Clay and Misty to all
the... The conversation is, do what I say.
Exactly.
You got to have some standards. Got to have some standards.
I'm with you, Clay. Hey, I'm with you, Clay.
Let me introduce our guest today, Dr. Daniel Roop, to my left. Good to see you, Dr. Dan.
The revered Dan. The revered Dr.
Did
Dan.
What all good Bear Grease Render podcast participants are supposed to do, bring the deer that they killed the racks in.
Nice. So
yeah, Dan brought his nice rack
that
in here.
That skull is clean. It's nice. How did you do
rather
that?
Rather petite. Hey, my wife, I got to give her most of the credit for the Dremel.
Are you serious?
Busted out the Dremel tool.
Oh, wow. She's pretty impressive.
Yeah, she got all the sinus cavity out.
Yeah, you'll never see a cleaner sinus cavity unless Kayla gets a hold of it.
Oh, she even Dremeled the top of it. Great. So we got a nice 8-point buck sitting here. Josh Spellmaker, the land bridge.
Didn't kill a deer.
Caught a decent trout. Okay. Didn't kill a deer.
Yep. You're sporting a nice, I like that Arkansas flag hat
you like
with
that?
A trout on it.
You like that?
Yeah, I do like that. Mm. So Josh went with me to Folsom, New Mexico.
Oh, nice.
When we recorded this George McJunkin podcast.
I'm basically a subject matter expert now.
Yeah.
Well, and still wasn't qualified enough to make it to the actual podcast.
Yeah. Why couldn't you ask me a question?
You could have asked. I mean, he was right there with you.
I could, and I was there.
Okay. Okay. I wasn't even going
to. I guess there are more parts coming.
I wasn't even going to bring this up, but now I've been put in the corner.
The cat is out of the bag.
No, during the middle of the interview with Kyle Bell and Matt Dougherty and the Folsom Museum.
Can you say his name?
His name,
please.
That's absolutely not how you
cannot. Dougherty.
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 Yeah.
I can absolutely
cannot say. Thank you, Josh.
There's another word, too.
There is another way
there's
of spelling.
There's lots of words I just can't say. Okay.
Do you guys know what the other word was from the podcast?
Pronunciation?
Nope.
Because he definitely can't.
Posthumous.
It's going to be
hard.
He says
posthumous.
I will say it's going to be hard to have community conversations if there are a lot of words that you can't say.
Okay.
Sorry.
Back to me being backed in a corner.
Yes.
About Josh not being on the podcast. His voice actually was on the podcast, and I had to yell at him across the museum. Hey, Josh. Y'all need to be quiet back there. Back there talking to this other guy. So. Anyway, you kind of were on the podcast. No, Josh rode with me out there. It was great having a travel.
It was fun.
We had a great time.
Yeah, it was like whirlwind.
We were out there for a very short amount of time. Drove there, got there late at night, like after 11 or maybe even midnight. I can't remember. And then we were gone the next day by like 2:00.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And got all that stuff for the podcast. So it was great. So Josh Spellmaker, nice hat.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Speaking of people that I tried to get on this podcast, I invited Josh's wife, who's a dear friend of ours as well.
Unfortunately, she's way more important than me and couldn't make it.
Yeah.
She is pretty important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To
Josh's left, Brent Reeves. Brent, great to see you.
Greetings.
Hey, I'd like to call out Brent for Brent drives 3 hours one way to come to this podcast.
He's basically the
hero. I drive 3 hours the other way going back.
No, just Brent's. Thank you, Brent.
You're welcome.
Brent's our good friend.
Yep. That's a nice pair of overalls you got on there.
They're all nice.
To Brent's left.
How many pairs of overalls
do
you
own? Yeah, I think it's a good question.
One.
Let's see. Probably six, I guess.
Six, one for almost every day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
You need like
on the Sabbath, he's naked.
Aren't we all?
Edit that out. Kids, close your ears.
Neighbors, close your eyes.
I just went to PG-12.
That's a front yard Halloween decoration you do not want.
Boom. Brent on the Sabbath.
Happy Halloween, y'all! Sabbath Brent.
No, thank you.
I wish he was wrapped in Christmas lights.
I wear that bearskin rug.
To Brent's left. My lovely wife, Misty Newcomb.
So great to be a part of all these conversations.
For being here.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for the invite.
So my dad would have been here, but he couldn't be here. That's all I'm going to say.
Nope. Probation.
There's a couple of housekeeping items I have to go through. Number one is Meat Eater, TheMeatEater.com right now has a massive Black Friday sale.
Yep, seen
it. If you ever wanted anything from Meat Eater, now's the time to do it. They've got, so all their t-shirts and stuff are like big percentage off. Let's see, let's just go right through this. 50% off logo wear.
That's significant.
$100 off Vortex Diamondback 3x5 10x50 rifle scope. $100 off Vortex scope.
Those are a lot of numbers.
Yeah. And then
hike.
This is what I would be most interested in if you were buying me a gift.
Wink, wink.
Thesaurus.
The book and knife bundles.
If you were buying him a Halloween gift, a
book
Thanksgiving
and knife
gift.
Bundles, okay. Dan lost his Benchmade. So you get the survival guide and a bug out knife for $165. Butchering Big Game bundle is the Meat Crafter knife, which Josh has
this
in his hand.
This knife is really feels super nice in the hand.
I wish you'd put it up.
Mm-hmm. I
he looks dangerous.
Everybody's out of my blood zone right
look at,
now.
Yeah. Look at Daniel.
So they have a lot of bundles. So you can check out the Meat Eater Black Friday sale. I will also say that soon and very soon, there's going to be a whole suite of Bear Grease merchandise.
Ooh.
Like t-shirts, hats, bunch of stuff. So that's it's not available just yet, but it will be available soon.
I'd like to see a t-shirt with a mashup of me and Brent's face.
Yes.
That'd be good.
Huh.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Or just a picture of me mashing his face.
Yeah.
I'll buy that one.
Yeah.
That's the one, Daniel.
Okay. I had a little bit of... We haven't gone through much feedback from, you know, like iTunes reviews recently. And I've kind of made a habit not to do that. But I did have one guy that gave us a 5-star review, but said, he said, Clay foreshadows way too much. And he said, it's a great podcast. I love it. Clay foreshadows way too much. And when he said it, I knew exactly what he meant. And I thought, man, this guy must just really love surprises.
Yeah.
He must, like, he doesn't want me to tell what I'm about to tell in a cryptic statement. He just wants a surprise.
Okay.
So, like, he wouldn't want his wife to be like, honey, you're not going to believe what we're going to have for dinner. He would rather her just go,
ta-da!
We're having lasagna for dinner. It's your favorite. And he's like, bam, thank you.
He's talking about the Folsom deal, right?
Oh, this was a while back he wrote this.
Because
I just thought it was funny.
Because
10 minutes of foreshadowing.
Like, is this part two when we find out what we're talking about? Misty?
It's kind of funny, Britt. It is kind of, because I said the same thing to Clay that I felt. So this was a while back, not since the fourth.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, no offense, but he might be right.
It took a little bit of time.
No offense.
I'm not just talking about the Folsom. I'm just talking about like life with Clay. There might be Clay loves suspense. He loves build up. He loves drama. And when you say you'll never guess what happened today, I don't know. My mind always goes to worst case scenario. Like, do our kids all have their arms? Are we all still intact? Anyway.
Well, I thought it would be funny if I just started, if every single sentence in the rest of my life, like anytime I just dealt with people in like normal life,
leave the cat
I foreshadowed.
Out.
No, like we're about to have dinner. And it's going to blow your mind what we're going to have.
You're not going to want to miss
like
it.
Like walking clickbait.
You're not going to want to miss it. That was the best spaghetti of all time. But the dessert is going to take you to places you've never been. I said that to like a dinner guest.
If you could weave this dynamic into your community conversations.
It's true.
It's like yes.
You're never going to guess the standards that we have for y'all.
The community. Actually,
you think the Halloween skeletons were great.
I think it needs to be like a positive. The Christmas just lights come. Like
positively
spin. You'll never guess the type of community we want to build here. The type where you could go to the grocery store without having to see.
Without nightmares.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
No, I just thought it was funny. It was a good statement. You know what? It's really difficult to build a documentary style podcast, especially with somebody like George McJunkin, because there's so many different facets of it. The whole premise of the series is not about George McJunkin. It's about the Folsom site.
Right.
And I didn't want to spill all the beans about George right at the beginning. So anyway, I agree with you. Way too much foreshadowing.
Well, people today They're instant.
That's a joke. Information. I'm foreshadowed to the day I die.
We all know you sucker. Are. We all know you are. But people today, you like you wonder something. You pick up the phone. You Google it. I need to answer this right now. It's not. True. Let me think about this. Like, nope. Let me type it out real quick and get you an answer. So you want the information instantly. Mm. You don't want to wait around.
Yeah.
And I get it because I was about to chew my arms off trying to think out what is this podcast about. And finally. Yeah.
You found out what
it was. I still don't know what it was about.
You've got to start listening to these things, Dan.
Hey, okay, so moving on, I've just got a few little topics here of things I want to discuss. Did you guys hear that they have postponed, quote unquote, the bear season in Washington State?
No.
No.
Did you hear about that?
No.
Yeah, this is a serious issue. No foreshadowing here. TC7403. On iTunes.
Called him out.
Mm-hmm.
No, really,
all his friends are going to know.
He's triggered.
That's what we called him in high school. Washington State, they have a commission. And right now, the commission, I believe, has 4 seats in it. And it's supposed to have 5. There's an unfilled seat.
Ooh. Oh.
And so, so there can be issues that come up where there's a split problems. Decision uh-huh. where they just have to basically be at a standstill.
Who can I ask a question? Who chooses the people who occupy these seats?
Well, that would be different for every state, and I'm not sure exactly how that works.
They're often governor-appointed.
Many of them, like here in Arkansas, it's appointees.
This is like the Supreme Court of hunting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the state, exactly what it is. And so what you have happening, just on a if you were just looking at a national scale, In some of these different states, especially states that have big urban centers like Washington State would have Seattle. But what's happening is that where there are large urban centers like Seattle, Washington, Dan, that's where most of the state lives, like in terms of population. So there's big, massive numbers of people that typically outnumber the people in the rural areas of the state, or at least equivalent. Another example would be in Michigan, where my friends at the Michigan Bear Hunters, they're constantly talking about, you know, the big cities in Michigan, Detroit, and where there's these massive urban centers, and these people simply don't have an understanding of rural culture.
It's true.
And the way things work in terms of wildlife management. Those urban centers are often easily preyed upon by those who have an agenda that is not favorable to hunting in a significant way. There are animal rights groups like the Humane Society of the United States that have massive, massive budgets. I mean, like just an unbelievable amount of money. And where do you think they're going to spend their money in trying to build their campaigns?
In the cities.
They're going to spend their money where they're going to get bang for their buck.
Right.
Yep.
And so they spend money in a lot of these urban centers and pick specific things. And it's not always against hunting. Sometimes it's with confinement agriculture or whatever. You know, they're involved in a whole lot of different stuff. But hunting is definitely something they're involved in. And there's many, many other even statewide groups that are affiliated with some of these bigger national groups. And basically, you have this thing where these urban centers end up controlling wildlife management. In Michigan is a referendum state, which means if you can get enough signatures on a sheet of paper, you can get anything on the ballot. That's a very simplified version. If they can get 100,000 signatures, they can basically vote on just about anything. In some states, like in Arkansas, all of our wildlife management is run by a commission, a 7-seated commission, as I understand it. So all the decisions of wildlife are made by them, not by just the average voter in the state. And so that's a good thing, as long as your commissioners understand hunting, understand wildlife management, are pro-hunting, and, you know, have some sense. I'm not sure what's going on in Washington, because there's a 4-seat commission, and 2 of them voted to against having a spring bear season, and 2 of them voted for it. And the way that it came up was the anti-group started a lot of propaganda about spring bear seasons, just saying all this negative stuff. They put it up, and it's now been postponed. And that's a tragedy, because it may not seem like that big a deal, but it is no secret that the anti-hunting agenda in this country is designed to break down our system incrementally. Incrementalization. Was like it, they're not trying to, they can't, they're not just going to shut down hunting.
Was any of it based off of scientific research from the Department of Natural Resources or Game and Fish?
No, Game and Fish is for it. Well, and it's a very, very regulated season. It's a draw season. I went through and looked at the results of the hunt from the last several seasons. And basically, it's not an over-the-counter thing. You can't just go to Washington and buy a spring bear tag and go hunting. They have, it looks like, about 15 different zones, and each zone is allotted a certain number of permits, and it's very regulated. And one of the things that they sometimes have used against spring bear hunting is that you could shoot a sow with a cub, which just doesn't happen very, very often. And when you look at the male to female kills in these different zones, there's a very high skew towards males being killed in that spring season. And they put spring seasons at such a time when it's going to be much more likely that you're going to kill a male. Earlier in the spring, the males are out roaming around a bunch more than the sows with cubs. So,
right.
You know, it's just, there's a bunch of science behind it. And so I say all that to say, you know, we live in like this heyday, seemingly, of North American hunting. And we live in this, also, this little time block of being humans where it's hard to see beyond that time block. And we may be like, ah, hunting's not that threatened. But it absolutely is. And these guys in Washington are seeing that. But there's a chance that the spring bear hunt will come back. But, yeah, we're going to work on some action steps for stuff that people can do. And, you know, this is a phrase that we say all the time, guard the gate. And maybe if you're new to the Bear Grease podcast, you've never heard us say that. But guarding the gate, predator hunting is the gate for the anti-hunting sentiment, wherever that comes from, to enter into our space as North American hunters. So if you looked at all North American hunting, you looked at elk hunters, whitetail hunting, duck hunting, pheasant hunting, squirrel hunting, the place, the entry point for people to crack into our little system that works so well and has been the absolute pinnacle of human animal husbandry on planet Earth since humans have been here, the way they crack in is typically through predator hunting, bear hunting specifically. And so that's why we say bear hunting is the gate. And so if we guard the gate by becoming informed and knowledgeable about why bear hunting makes sense, why it's sustainable, why it's scientifically backed, why it is just such a positive thing. You know, and I could go on all the talking
and
points.
Communicate with our legislators and AGFC commissioners and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and yeah, so we say guard the gate. And so in Washington, they're having a tough time. And there's going to be some places where we can, when it comes back around and they have a full commission that can vote on it and actually make a decision, we could flog these guys' emails and different ways we can communicate with legislators and say, hey, this is a good thing. It doesn't make any sense for us not to have this spring bear hunt there. Guard the gate.
Guard the gate.
Yeah, man. It's a heavy, heavy topic right here before Thanksgiving.
Speaking of heavy topic, if that chair that Dan's sitting in lasts to the end of this podcast, I'll be surprised.
If you
surprised.
Hear a crash, it is Daniel falling to the ground.
He's got a double handful of screws in it.
I'm always giving this chair. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I just got back from Nebraska. Had a good whitetail hunt in Nebraska.
Prove it.
I don't have the
horn. You had an amazing whitetail hunt in Nebraska.
Yeah.
That buck is the size of a truck.
The pictures did it favors.
Camera adds 10 pounds.
What about the body of the animal was big though, right?
It was, they're not as big as you would think. That deer was probably 160 pounds, 160
really?
Pound buck probably. Maybe a little bigger than that.
Wow, it looked big.
Yeah. It was a good buck, had a good hunt with the Meat Eater crew. You'll be able to see that hunt on season 11 of Meat Eater
nice.
At some point. So that'll be good. So as you know, on the Bear Grease Render, what we're doing is we're going to talk about the last Bear Grease podcast, which was part one. This is an interesting series because
how many parts are there going to be?
Probably
don't,
three.
Don't really? Foreshadow four, seven, too much.
Eight.
You won't believe how many parts.
You won't believe how many podcasts there will be about
just them. When you thought it was safe.
The series is about the Folsom archaeological site. But the whole first podcast wasn't about the Folsom site really much at all. It was about the man that found the Folsom site. That makes it fun though, because it's gonna be really interesting.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, Dan. Define for me archaeology.
I actually had this thought on the way here. Like, what is speaking archaeology actually mean?
Oh, thank you, Josh.
So I'm curious to see Dr. Dan.
It's the study of material culture. So it's not just stuff that's dug up, but archaeology, even present day, you can look at material culture, would look like look at our phones, our clothes, anything like that.
Material culture. But material human culture.
Exactly. Yeah. You're going to look at material human culture.
You nailed on the distinction there, because a paleontologist or paleontology would be what?
Study of bones.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So when that's what I thought.
Because I was trying to decipher the difference between paleontology and archaeology.
Mm-hmm.
Because was George McJunkin a paleontologist, an amateur paleontologist, or archaeologist?
Right. Well, okay. And that's what cued me in. And I think in context, like if this had been on the ACT test, you know, like we used to take back in the day.
Are you trying to bring up my ACT score?
Yeah.
Because it was subpar. I'd rather not talk about that.
Okay. If that question had been on a test, I would have got it right. Like, what is archaeology? Sure. A, this, B, this, C, sure this. Because I'm really good at understanding context clues. But if you would have just said, write an essay on what archaeology is with no context clues, I might not have known. Because Dr. Meltzer said and we're going to get to know Dr. Meltzer really good on part two. Dr. Meltzer said that the site went from a paleontological site.
Oh, no, that wasn't
right.
Into an archaeological site. Yeah. So it transitioned when they found the human evidence, so material culture. So very good. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks.
Yeah. What did so Josh, you went with me to Folsom, New Mexico.
I did.
Would you have known anything about the Folsom site before that?
No, I never even heard about it. Never heard of George McJunkin. Never heard of the Folsom site. It was fascinating, though.
Dan, would you have heard of the Folsom site? You know, don't try to make us feel like you're smart because you're a doctor. Just tell us the truth.
I wondered if it was connected at all with the Folsom Prison blues. Did anybody else think that? Was it just me?
A lot of people that I said we went to Folsom, they were like, yeah, Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
I was like, nope. I was like, nope.
Just no.
That was Folsom, California.
Different Folsom altogether, guys.
Yeah,
totally different. If you went to Folsom, there's nothing there. I mean, it is in the middle of nowhere. See,
which made me think, good spot for a prison.
Yeah, I can see that.
No. Okay, never mind. No, I didn't know a thing about it.
Okay, good. That's good to know. See, that's a good touch point. Two of the smartest people I know didn't know a thing about Folsom, New Mexico and the Folsom site.
Dan was one. Who's the other one?
Who did you? Brent Reed. Wow. Now, Brent will lie and say that he knew about it. Watch this. Hey, Brent, did you know anything about Folsom?
Yes. Absolutely.
Have you been to Folsom?
No, we
weren't. I would say in this room, if anybody had been to Folsom before, and I have to say that the Spielmakers and the Newcombs have traveled a lot out west.
Mm-hmm. True story.
And still, of anybody in this room that I would expect to have been at Folsom, I would say Brent Reeves.
We went by it. We went where the sign when we were out hunting was straight.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw the place to go out there. Now, my familiarization with it.
I don't think that counts as knowing a lot about Folsom.
I didn't say. You asked me, did I know about it? And I said, yes.
I did know about it. My
familiarization with it would be from the projectile points,
okay,
arrowheads and artifacts, Native American stuff. Because we picked those up on our farm from when I was big enough to pick up rocks and tell the difference between one I should keep and one I should throw at my brother. And my brother he's self-taught about a lot of the different types of points, Clovis points and all the different
oh,
types.
Oh, so you would have known that terminology, like
yes.
Folsom point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just from being interested in it, not from knowing everything,
not
which
like academically
I do,
knowing about it.
But yeah, exactly. Just from a vein of interest that I have.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have only probably known about it from the Meat Eater podcast a couple of years ago, because Steve Rinella had David Meltzer, Dr. David Meltzer, who we'll get to know a ton on about later. He had him on there.
Was that a foreshadow?
Yep. I'm keeping up with him. That's number 12.
Yeah. Mm. It's kind of like when a friend of yours has a tick or like a little thing they do all the
or
time.
Or a flea.
Or a flea. And then somebody points it out and then all you can do is hear that. Yeah. Now, thanks. Yep. Commenter.
Yep. Yep.
Now we're all stuck with
TCO
this.
TCO734. Misty, would you have known about the Folsom site?
Because I'm married to you. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't say, oh, I know a whole lot about that. But yeah. I would have definitely like have heard about it. And
this is a lot of Clay's pillow talk is archaeological sites.
For sure.
Talking about old Folsom points.
So talking about finding stone points, what's interesting is that the Folsom point, you could find a Folsom point in my front yard. Did you know that?
No, you could not.
How?
Yes, you could. Yeah, because the Folsom Point, and we'll be talking about this on a later podcast.
14.
They found this style of point in Folsom, New Mexico. This style of point predated anything they'd ever found in North America in terms of technology of stone points. So they pull this stone point out, and they're like, holy cow.
We've never seen one like this.
And
I have to say, after seeing them handling them, they are beautiful stone points.
Yeah,
they're really something to see. The way that they're shaped, like I've seen a lot of stone points you've found here. Comparatively, they're so delicate and sharp, and just uniform. Like it took a lot of skill to really make those.
Well, Josh, that was a great description. That was. Super.
I feel like I have one impressed. In my heart right now.
Yeah, that was great.
But the reason you could find one here is that they then use the term Folsom to describe a time period. It doesn't describe a region. It describes a time period of people that were here. But typically they find Folsom points in the Midwestern United States from New Mexico you can find Folsom points here in Arkansas.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And it was a technology that a people of a certain time period used. So it just happened. They found the first one there, so they named it Folsom. That's the way archaeologists think.
So that's where ones were found.
That's right.
Okay. But since then, they found them other places.
All over the place.
Interesting.
Yeah, all over the place. But I don't want to dive in too deep on Folsom because we'll be talking about it later. Dang. But George McJunkin, though.
George McJunkin was a cool dude.
No doubt.
I'm surprised I'd never heard of him before. And I'm still surprised at how little there is known about the guy.
Right.
But what a guy of character. I think that, there's a lot of people that are idolized in the world these days. Some that... are good, some that are not so great, but this is a guy that you can look at his life and say, there's a guy of integrity, there's a guy who stuck with things. I really appreciate the fact that he really went against the grain, you know. And I appreciate that about guys in that part of the world, that life revolves around providing for your families and working hard and caring about others. Those are the things that are meaningful to me. And to see a guy like that who really went against the trends of the age and stood up for what was right. Super, super cool guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I appreciate the fact that I got to go with you just to learn about him. These guys revere this guy. I mean, these old men just talk about him with such reverence and honor, make themselves great.
What I picked up when I talked to Matt Doherty, he wasn't super convincing on the phone that he was the George McJunkin expert of the world. He just kind of, I don't know, he wasn't just like putting all his cred out there. And finally, I just asked him, I said, hey, are you the guy I need to be talking to? Just tell me, you know, I mean, because I need to find an expert.
I need to talk to that guy.
And he was like, yeah, pretty much. And I was like, okay, that's good enough for me. If you pretty much think you're the expert, then that's good. We go there. He lives in the building that George McJunkin died in.
Yeah.
Turns out he's pretty much that guy, right?
Yeah. His grandfather, so there's a picture of George, and you can find it online. It's in the book, The Black Cowboy. There's a picture of George McJunkin in the early 1900s standing on a porch, just a vertical picture. Mm-hmm. And there's a little, you know, and George is black. There's a little white baby at his feet, mm-hmm. which...
Toddler.
That's a story right there, is it yeah. not?
Yeah.
And that little baby is Matt's grandfather.
Grandfather, yeah.
They just revered George. And Matt's grandmother is the one who basically collected intel on George's life. I mean, think about if a guy died, like just a guy down the street that you knew, and he died, and then all of a sudden, 5 years after his death, you realized that he had done something that changed our understanding of human history and was going to be in textbooks. You'd kind of be like, holy cow, we should have yeah. probably took a few more pictures, wrote yeah. down a few more dates, saved a few more letters.
Not made fun of his Halloween decorations.
You know, and that's what's so interesting about George's is like his life just kind of passed by and they recognized that he was unique as a cowboy and all this. But anyway, Matt's grandmother was the main source of info because she had saved correspondence, and that's just kind of neat.
Yeah.
And so these, I said all that to say these guys, I really think if you'd have talked bad about George McJunkin, they would have fought you.
Yes. Yes,
they would have
definitely.
Punched you in the face.
Kyle Bell would have shot you with his H&R 32 pistol.
Okay, yeah. Let me ask you this, because when I was listening to the podcast, this was a question that I had. It's clear that they revere him, like you say, and it's clear that that was earned. And I know why I would think highly of him. Why do you think, I feel like the intensity with which they respect George McJunkin and devote a lot of attention to him is pretty high
mm-hmm.
and way above average for just someone that you respect. Why do you think that is?
Two things.
Okay.
Do you have an answer?
I want to hear what you have to say first.
Two things. They live in a tiny little bitty town. Folsom, New Mexico has like 50 people in it. And apparently there's some kind of political election going on there, and it's pretty heated.
You saw lots of signs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's like a town of 50, and I think they're having a city council election. And there's a little mudslinging going on.
Just 25 to 25.
You have once again polarized
America. That's what I was looking for, Dan. I was waiting for it.
You stepped into that town and they just parted like the Red Sea. One side to the other.
So it's a small town and he is a hero of that town.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like the quarterback from, you know, like 1968 that won the state championship. And so They're like, man.
The name of your quarterback was Uncle Rico?
No, have you never seen Napoleon Dynamite?
Okay.
These people hate Halloween. They hadn't seen Napoleon Dynamite.
They don't watch movies.
So it's a small town, and he was a hero, number one. Now, Matt, it's a small town, and he's the hero, but this was a family friend yeah. that they were endeared to.
Actually, you mentioned in there the flood that revealed the bones. There was there's a plaque right near the museum, but she was the switchboard operator, and she stayed at the operator thing so she could call people and let them know that the flood was coming until she died in the flood.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, pretty amazing story.
Holy cow. Yeah.
So the flood that uncovered the Folsom site was really a unique flood, and we wouldn't have this kind of stuff here, but it wasn't even raining in Folsom, New Mexico. But it had rained on Johnson Mesa, which is 20 miles away. 14 inches of rain fell, just like
man,
that.
Flash flood.
This water just comes rushing. And it's not even raining. So
here it
it's
is.
Like, why would people even be
oh, wow.
that here worried it about it?
Here it is. Sarah Sally J. Rourke, heroine of the Dry Cimarron Flood. On the night of August 27th, 1908, while working as a telephone operator, Sally received a call that a wall of water was rushing down the Dry Cimarron River toward Folsom. She perished that stormy... It's like blurry. She perished that stormy night at her switchboard, warning of the danger, saving countless lives. Telephone operators across the country contributed 4,334 dimes to honor their colleague with a memorial.
Did you know
they found her body a year later?
No.
Oh,
like miles downstream with feet sticking out of the ground.
No way.
True story.
I don't think you should do your fingers like that when telling the story.
Also, Andy Griffith, the telephone operator, the operator on there, Sarah, was named after that lady.
No, oh, really?
No, I'm lying.
As the words were coming out of my mouth, really, I was like, you're really lying.
It's that hypnotizing voice. Even though you Velvet know pipes. He's lying, you want it to be true. You just.
It would have been cool, classic. Though.
It would have been really
that would
cool.
have been a great story.
Dan, what did you think about the podcast?
I was with Misty a little bit. It took me a little. First of all, I always prefer the podcasts that are about people. So the Panther one previously, I think that was great, and it was finishing up on Warren.
Right.
But I thought, oh, okay, we get a person. You know, I like that, like a story, like a person. But I was trying to kind of get my mind around
what we're talking about.
You know, I was just, and I get it. There's some bones and there's points in there, but one of the things that kind of stuck out to me was, you're living in a day and age where everything is, I guess, of course, now, like, the worst thing you could ever say, here I am, a white man, the worst thing I could ever say is, oh, I don't see color, you know, I'm colorblind or whatever. That's, like, the last that we should, like, we need to be able to be aware of that and see it and interact with it. And but I think hearing them, so when they were first saying that, I was like, wait a minute, what's going on here? We're not supposed to say that anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the more That's they talked point. About it, back, you know, 3-4 generations ago, when everything you're doing is practical skills, it really would have been a realm for a man of color to kind of move up the ranks. And then hearing how it was actually the Mexican cowboys that really welcomed him in and taught him. And I don't know. I just thought it's kind of interesting to hear this story at a time when race is such a big deal in our country. And so part of me was like, man, that's so great, because here's this man who, on the basis of merit, was able to display his character and was welcomed in. But then at the end of his life, you know, it was kind of sad to hear that he never married, because mm-hmm. even though we don't see color, there's not a white woman around that's going to marry this guy. You know, it's just complex, and it's just entering into history and a guy's story.
I think it's really, when you hear stories like that, when you got to the end and they started talking about him not being able to find a wife, you know, you watch the Disney or the Hollywood versions of these heroes and people who went through civil rights movements or things like that, and sometimes they attempt to show the difficulty of it. That'd be a tough thing to show the difficulty of in a movie like that. You know, there's a lot of stuff that we really don't appreciate and couldn't appreciate that they had to sacrifice to pursue the lifestyle that they pursued. And I don't even know if they would have had an opportunity to count those costs. You know, that I don't know that that would have been a logical thing that you would think through.
I see what you're saying. So you're saying, like, in a Hollywood version of racism, like,
triumphant,
like someone like chanting racial slurs in the street would be something that would be very,
you could
evident.
Look at that. Yeah, you could.
But the other side of it that is a harder story to tell is a man that never marries because of,
and I think it causes people to not appreciate the difficulties, the interpersonal difficulties that people mm-hmm. go through to rise above the, you know, to the ceilings that are put there for them at whatever time that they find themselves in. The reason we like George McJunkin is because he exceeded expectations and he exceeded the boundaries that were placed on him. And he did it, like Dan said, on merit. And he was able to, like you said in the podcast, he clearly had social tact, like he had a whole skill set of things that allowed him to reach what he reached and achieve what he achieved. That same skill set would be a skill set that would really want to be married. I mean, that mm-hmm. social ability and all that tells you this guy wants to have a family. He wants to be married.
And he did. In the book, it says that, like, his whole life, he wanted to have a family.
Yeah. And that's a cost that it's hard to capture. It's mm-hmm. it's just hard to take into account the loss. To me, it's hard to really feel that. And when you went to that part of the podcast, it was just really sad to me. Yeah. That part of it, it made me sad for him.
You know, here's another interesting aspect of George McJunkin, is we would have never known who he was had he not found a once in a how many gazillion lifetime archaeological site.
Right.
The only reason that he's in the Cowboy Hall of Fame, honestly, is because we know it knew his name.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm not saying he didn't deserve to be in, he's not in the Cowboy Hall of Fame because of that.
Right.
He's in the Cowboy Hall of Fame because of the way he rode Bronx.
His prowess.
His life.
Yeah.
His ability to be a cowboy. But I think if you're really looking at it, the only reason we knew him and people told the story 100 years later is because he found something that how many humans have been in America for the last 10,000 years? And one of them found an archaeological site that rewrote human. A couple now. There's been a couple others. But like, point being, how many George McJunkins are out there that just weren't the one that found something that made them super famous?
Yeah.
You know?
And it's interesting that that George McJunkin, until 1972, wasn't even credited with that find.
Right.
It was the archaeologist that came from Denver that
went and
viewed the site shortly after, within a couple of years after George McJunkin's death. And then he and a colleague were credited with that find. And it wasn't until 1972 that George McJunkin was actually credited with it.
I'll tell you what impressed me most about it. I think somebody would eventually found that site. It didn't have to be George McJunkin. I was most impressed with the story of him deciding to do something in a time that was hard. He decided he wanted to read and write, so he put himself in a position to learn that. He set a goal, and he was goal-oriented and solely focused on making himself a better human being. And he did that. And he did that in a time when it was hard. And today, you know, it's so different where people gripe about the spoon that they're being fed with, about the size of the spoon back when that cat didn't have a spoon. And people, regardless of their situation, they can, if you work hard enough, things shouldn't be easy. Things should be hard, and you should have to work for it. You probably shouldn't have to work for it as hard as George did, but he did it. And he didn't, nowhere in that podcast did I hear one person say anything or tell a story that George sat around and said, man, I had it tough coming up. It was always what was going to be happening down the road. He said once he reached that, just from my summation of it, once he reached that goal of educating himself, it didn't stop. He wanted to do more and he wanted to do more. But he did find those bones, that site, and he thought, he didn't think it was just bones. He knew enough to say, hey, somebody ought to check this out. They never did in his lifetime. But it was just, I think he is a great inspiration for what a thirst of knowledge can do for somebody, regardless of the situation they're in. That impressed me the most.
Yeah, I thought David Meltzer had a good angle. It's interesting talking to so many people about one person and you get just kind of little snippets. But David Meltzer said that George McJunkin was 1 in 100 of cowboys that would have even got off their horse to look at a bone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And again, George didn't see 32 bison antiquus bones. He saw just a handful of bones sticking out of the dirt down in this arroyo. And just, you know, the curiosity to get off his horse and go down there and look was
but curiosity is a thirst for knowing, finding out what something is, you know, and that fire never went out. Because here he was, he had probably surpassed anything that he could have possibly dreamed of doing growing up as a slave. Here I am, the boss. I am the boss of this ranch. Why do I need to do more? But yet his curiosity never stopped. It was really cool. I can't wait. I'm very interested in the Native American part, in the Folsom stuff.
Yeah.
But I kind of hate to see this chapter close on him.
Yeah. You know, that's the thing about George. There's not a lot of intel on him. You know, this one book, The Black Cowboy, is, as far as I know, the only book that's written about him. And there's some other snippets of intel in a few different places. But most of it most of it's in that book.
I assume he's buried. Did y'all see a cemetery or place where he was buried?
Yeah, he's buried. He's buried in Folsom, and I wish we could have gone to his grave.
Yeah,
we didn't.
And his house.
Yeah, or where his house was.
Where his house was. Yeah.
Yeah, that was also so sad.
I know. Got a man, he's just got a handful of possessions, and the house burns down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's because he took that skull.
Oh, you think that's what it was?
Yeah, that's juju.
Hey, did anybody catch my joke when I said, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but I want to talk about this part of George's life? And then when I ended,
you said, thanks, Debbie. Deb.
I said, thanks, Deb.
Yeah, we caught it.
Oh, we caught it.
I think it's fun.
It wasn't that funny.
Were you hoping that we would bring that up on the Bear Grease as our favorite part?
No.
Edit all this out. Now, that one part where you referred back to the joke that you had made, just seamlessly, that one really got me.
No, one of the funniest things I've ever been a part of my entire life, I was a part of a business networking organization back when I
LinkedIn
had a landscape company. And one day, so it's this super awkward deal where we had breakfast once a week with all these business owners in the community. And I was a young guy trying to start this business, so I was going. There's like 20 people in the room. And somebody gives some like terrible news about something like... Like every week you had to stand up and talk about your business. And I really don't remember what was said, but a guy stood up and said, I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but you know, I'm going bankrupt and we've got to sell our house. And
my wife left me.
Mother-in-law's house burned down.
Can somebody buy my breakfast?
And the place just goes silent. Like 20 people that don't know each other just go silent. And my CPA who was there, who had invited me, to break the silence after like 20 seconds of just awkward silence, he goes, thanks a lot, Deb. I never forgot that. So anytime someone says, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, I go, thanks, Deb.
That's
so
funny.
I watched people's faces, a couple of people that I was with when I listened to the podcast, and they never even got it. They never even registered in their mind. So there's a lot of hidden clues inside the Bear Grease podcast.
Subliminal foreshadowing.
That's a subliminal message.
There's a lot of, I'll just say, as possibly one of the people he was watching, there's a lot of pressure to listen to the Bear Grease in front of Clay.
Does he sit there and like just watch every reaction?
That's my joke. Did she get it?
I absolutely do.
I'm sorry to know why you guys don't see many movies. Yeah. There's a whole lot of Misty, listen to this.
He watches Misty.
Yeah, one more time. It's more like Misty, you'll never guess what he's about to say.
You'll never guess.
Well, the podcast was adequate, I think.
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like it was pretty adequate.
Thank you, Gary.
Too bad Dad's not here. He could really put me into place.
I'm sure he caught it.
He caught it. He was not amused. It was an okay podcast. That's what it said.
It was just okay.
I thought it was a good podcast, and I'm glad you did it. And I'm glad. I think that you understand, foreshadowing here, that once you hear the second one, you kind of understand the significance of this contribution he made in a way that you don't understand after the first one, which is the great part about a two-parter. Yeah. And so we'll all come to appreciate him. I think that we all appreciate him as it stands just for being a cowboy. I mean, like, just for his life. And I think that that's also super valuable for someone to live their life in such a way that, gracious, there's people devoted to it and to preserving the honor of what he did. And so that speaks volumes, in particularly of a man who was born into the world at a time that he was born into it, where it was harder for him to reach that level of respect. Mm-hmm. Than it would have been other people. And so I think in and of itself, his life without the discovery of this other thing, really without understanding the significance of it, was a life that was worthy to be covered on the Bear Grease podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Good people deserve
to be remembered.
Yeah.
Regardless if they make an impact. Good people make an impact, period. His would be a global impact for what he found.
Mm-hmm.
But he obviously had a impact on that community because all those people loved him so much.
Mm-hmm.
So they deserve to be remembered.
Yeah, it really is remarkable, the loyalty that whole family feels to him and that the people in that community feel to him. And that is notable. That's significant.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to get to hear more from the illustrious Kyle Bell?
Nope, we're done. We're done with Kyle.
What a character that guy is.
We're not remembering him. That's how you said that. Nope, we're done with him.
Yeah, that guy is a character.
Yeah, he was.
Man, that photo of him Am Which I thinking one? Of the right guy?
Braids.
No, I'm thinking with, yeah, braids with the leather straps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I, when you described him on the podcast, and then I saw, I can't remember where I saw, oh, I saw that photo.
On Instagram.
Little yeah. video of
yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, that guy.
We followed him else. All over that ranch looking for the Folsom site. It's kind of in a weird place.
Yeah.
And we kind of got turned around.
So the Folsom site, you actually, you can't go to it. It's
yeah.
not like a national park or something. It's... There's a publicly owned 10 acres that the Folsom site is on. So it is the Folsom site is on public land, but it's landlocked by private.
Yeah.
So there's no legal access to get in there.
We had to get permission from the ranch owner to get back
and
in.
And there's
there.
Nothing to see there either.
Yeah, you would never know you were at it's the just, Folsom site. It just looks like a patch of grass and a ditch. Just,
no fence.
Just, well, there's a big fence around it okay. to keep the cattle off of this ranch, off of it, just so it's
do
not.
Do they still do digs out there?
No. Well, yes, they will one day. What I learned from Dr. Meltzer is that archaeological sites, there is like etiquette. Mm-hmm. There are rules in the way archaeological sites are now developed or excavated, and they purposefully leave some stuff
right
for technology that maybe we can't even foresee, that in 100 years from now somebody will be able to go back in and learn more, which is just bizarre to me. So the way it worked was that the site was excavated in 1927, and that was the first time it was excavated, and there was a bunch of people involved in that, and then that was it, and it was a multi-year process. And then Dr. David Meltzer from SMU in Dallas, he basically built a case for why they needed to go back and do a second excavation of the Folsom site. And I don't know what people and processes you have to go through, but he got permission, and they went in and did like a multi-year second excavation of the site and learned a whole bunch of new stuff, and now they had radiocarbon dating.
Right.
They did not find any points, though. And then when Steve Rinella was there, after,
oh, he's been out there?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. When Rinella was there, after Meltzer did his excavation, Steve said they were standing there at the Folsom site, and he looked down, and there was a bone sticking out of the dirt.
For real.
And he said he so bad wanted to go over there and pull it out, and the archaeologist that he was with was like, don't touch it. So there's something connected to that bone.
That archaeologist is a little ornery.
They wrote a song for about sure. That.
Man, poor Steve. What if that's like the finding of the century, and he was robbed of?
He'll get credited with it in 50 years.
Okay.
After he's dead.
No one will remember Steve Rinella for his media or for all his accolades. They'll go.
He's the guy that found that bone.
Tell you what, they're going to remember.
He was the one media guy. That walked
got
down
off
that,
of his horse,
got out of his Subaru, and walked down to look at that bone.
They're also going to remember that he's 2.5 feet taller than you are.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was wild.
From that Instagram video. My,
that photo. He was on a stool.
He was. So, okay, if you're not up to date on what is being spoken of here, there was a video that leaked out of Steve Rinella and I debating a painting, and he was standing on a...
he had the higher ground.
He was on a milking stool, it looked like.
Yeah. So in this living room, there was a... You know how a wood stove will be setting up off the ground
yeah.
to have like a rock platform that it's sitting up on?
I mean, it had to be a pretty high platform. I mean, a platform is 6 inches, maybe. He was 3 feet taller than you.
He was standing on that rock platform, Dan.
And were you kneeling before him?
I don't know. It was, he's taller than me for sure.
What?
Not like a foot taller than me.
he's more than a foot taller than you in that photo.
Oh, man. But the good news is that I was right.
Oh, gosh.
It was evening?
It was,
yeah, it was
evening.
The
it looked
artist,
like evening to me.
But then Steve comes up with this whole thing about death of the author. Have y'all heard about death of the author? Mm-mm. It's like an artist does a painting or a writer writes something, And even their intent doesn't matter. What matters is how it's perceived by the reader. Yeah. So they call it death of the author. So you could read, you could look at a painting and go, that's mourning. And then the author chimes in on Instagram and says, no, it's actually evening, even though you thought it was morning, Steve.
And Clay's trying to tell you that is what happened.
That's exactly what happened. And then, but then death of the author means that, and Steve brought this up,
it
doesn't matter what the
author
thinks. It's what your perception is.
Hmm.
As I recall, you and I were correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brent was with me the whole time. Thanks, Brent.
How many times does this exact phenomenon happen as y'all are looking at your neighbor's Halloween decorum? Death of the author.
Listen, I'm just trying to feed my family.
Toes have been stepped on.
Speechless.
Listen, that's how those community conversations are going to go. Listen.
If you could have seen it, Brent. Literally, there was skeletons in lawn chairs, a fake fire, a cross with a burning witch.
Oh, wow.
This is
Okay, that does sound a little
intense.
And
the people in the lawn chairs had a dog leash that was connected to the skeleton of a dog.
Now, that's one step too far. Until you described the dead dog, I was with them. I was okay with
just
everything.
Like, why get are we out of celebrating yard. This? Why are we celebrating this?
Worth it. Worth the money.
Okay. George McJunkin. I love, what's so great about all this is I'm learning inside of all this as well, you know? It's pretty fascinating to explore these unique people and really dive in deep and understand who they are. Misty's laughing. Why are we laughing?
Misty, are you thinking he's not learned a dang thing?
I think that Clay probably wanted to edit out my initial comments about the Halloween pictures.
And we just keep bringing it back up.
Hashtag beating a dead
horse. I
could
tell by the way he was looking at me. And it is like the episode.
Halloween.
I'm sorry.
Happy Halloween.
We said all that to say happy Thanksgiving, folks. Happy Thanksgiving. No, I enjoyed learning about George McJunkin. These guys I'll never forget. I feel like when I look into anybody, whether it's James Lawrence, Warner Glenn, Roy Clark, Britt Davis, all these guys, I mean, part of being human is that we don't live in isolation. And we can look at people's lives and glean stuff from it. I mean, how stupid would you be to think that you're just this independent guy that's just going to build your life based upon no influence from somebody else? I want to be influenced by a guy like George.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, he dealt with stuff that I'll never deal with, but he just was dead set on what he wanted to do. I appreciate guys that are just gritty and tough. I do. I'm a sucker for gritty and tough. And man, if you're a good bronc rider, you're gritty and tough. If you're a black guy back in the 1800s that is
making a reputation for yourself
way up inside of the ranching mm-hmm. community in his area, you got to be pretty gritty.
Yep.
And then his grittiness to learn how to read and write when a lot of people probably weren't.
Yeah.
Just, I respect the guy. Mm-hmm. He was funny too. He had a good sense of humor and just, I like him. I'm going to incorporate that into my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're ever in Folsom, go to the museum. It's pretty cool.
It is.
I was surprised to walk around while I was making a bunch of noise while you were trying to record a podcast. Mm-hmm. And there was a piece of art in there that was donated by somebody from Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, oh, look at that.
Wow.
But yeah, fascinating stuff from historic stuff to fossils to everything. World War II stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Cool. Thanks, everybody. Really appreciate it.
You are welcome.
Keep the wild places wild. That's what it brings me.